Hey everyone, thank you for tuning in to the SFLC podcast. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Dependable Solutions, innovating the future of your small to medium-sized business since 2012. Learn how you can save 40 to 60% on your overall credit card processing bill by going to dependable-solutions.net. Again, that's dependable-solutions.net. Also, teststrips.com. That's teststrips with a Z.com. Managing diabetes is your business. Making it affordable is theirs. Sell your extra unused diabetes supplies for up to $50 per box and support a worthy cause. Rated a Better Business Bureau accredited A+ rating for over 5 years. Partnered with 98.5 The Sports Hub and affiliated with the American Diabetes Association. Make sure to check them out again. That is teststrips with a Z.com. Finally, we'd like to thank the UFC South Austin Gym, located at 9900 South Interstate 35 in Austin, Texas. Learn how you can get 3 free classes when you sign up and mention the SFLC podcast. Be sure to call them at 512-292-1900.
SFLC podcast.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the SFLC podcast here. We have a bonus episode for you this week. We had Amy Kaplan on here earlier. Wonderful having her on. Always a pleasure talking. UFC 241. We do have a break from UFC this weekend, but of course we do have Matt Mitrione versus Khritanov, part 2, going on for Bellator 225 this weekend. So the life of an MMA reporter never really stops. But as far as the bonus interview is concerned today, really get to have the pleasure of talking with a local fighter here in the truest form of local fighting with DeMarcus Good here, who is just recently 1-0 as far as kickboxing is concerned. DeMarcus, thank you for joining the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I love having you guys on. Again, we talk with Eric Kowal all the time, and it's always about how... Of course, we can all talk UFC fighters. We can all talk Bellator fighters. But it's really that local scene. And I remember talking with Eric when I was down in Texas and how I was really trying to find that local scene in Austin. And it was difficult to find, you know? Sometimes you don't have that support, that community that wants to get behind mixed martial arts or combat sports in general. I mean, I was at the University of Texas. Look, it's football and basketball, let's be honest. But as far as combat sports, Texas as a state is still very much so a boxing state. But I'm back here in Chicago. We know that there's a lot of promotions that are going on at the amateur and at the professional level here. And you ended up getting into this. You've been training for a while at Team One MMA, and you've been doing this for years. But then you finally kind of showed up, for lack of a better term, and ended up getting into the actual circuit, the scene, right?
Yep.
And it's unique to actually hear this story. So let's kind of talk about it a little bit. You've been kickboxing and you've been training for that for years, but exactly how long have you been doing that?
About 4 years.
About 4 years?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. About 4 years now.
Okay. And in the midst of the training that you did prior to recently, when you did make that step and that dedication to say, I do want to end up going and competing, when you started, was there ever a thought in your mind that you did want to compete, or was there something else that was putting you in these classes?
I definitely wanted to. I think the thing that helped me up the most, as far as that process going, was just like the mental battle behind it. I think that aspect of it is not talked about enough. I think that, you know, when you watch combat sports, they just see, you know, the punching and all that type of stuff, and they think it just, you know, it ends there, or it begins and ends there. But man, there's so much that goes on up here, you know, and you got to get yourself mentally prepared for that, and especially for your first time, you know, because you're not entirely sure how to prepare for that. So yeah.
Well, and there's also the thing, and I can say this because I did used to go in and work with you guys over at Team One MMA. Mm-hmm. And Sean Terrace, the coach there, was very adamant about making sure that if anyone did end up getting into the competitive side of this, that they were fully ready. And not just they were fully ready, but they knew the organization that they were going to end up putting you in. Yeah. They wanted to make sure that the fighter that you were going up against was of your same level, right? And, yeah. you know, you ended up taking on an 0-0 guy, amateur. You were zero. You were brand new, making your debut as well.
Yep.
So you had that same level mm-hmm. there going in, where we've also seen in the past, there are some organizations, and it's not to speak badly about them, but you know, you sit there and say, oh, I need a strict amateur to come in on this fight card.
Yeah.
You know, but then you come to find out that the person you're fighting has like 3 or 4 fights under his belt already.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that was one of like the biggest things I was worried about, you know. I definitely wanted to go in there, even like, you know, let's just say, like, even if I lost, I just wanted to make sure I got a fair shot, you know, because I have seen a good number of fights where, you know, this guy is fresh. You know, he wants to see how he fares. And this other guy he's going against is like, you know, 3-4, which obviously that's not the best record, but he's got 7 fights worth of experience, and then it ends up completely one-sided. So, yeah, that was definitely a concern in the beginning.
So you're training for about 4 years. You finally decide to make the leap and say, you know what? I'm strong enough. I've got my mental power there. Mm-hmm. I know that I can compete at the beginning level, the right place for me to start. Mm-hmm. So you sit down and you talk with Sean. What's the conversation that you two have that kind of you both end agreeing that you're ready to do this?
So for me, what kind of solidified me wanting to fight, you know, first of all, let me say, like, me coming into the sport, I kind of came in a lost soul, you know, low self-esteem, lack of any type of confidence, you know, the works. And I always loved, you know, combat sports, but I just always felt like, you know, I just don't know if I have, you know, what it takes. So eventually I just kind of stopped worrying about competing for a second. I just focused on just the training aspect of it. And surprisingly, as I kept training, you know, and I did it with, just, you know, the utmost enjoyment. Like, it's a lot easier to progress when you don't put all this like weight, you know, on your shoulders. And as like the times progressed, I kind of realized like, man, dude, I feel like I'm finding myself, you know, I felt like everything I was doing in class was like affecting me, you know, outside as well. And I felt myself becoming a better DeMarcus, you know, day by day, especially working under Sean. He is a phenomenal coach, man. Like for him, it's not just, you know, teaching you the lessons. Like he wants you to feel good, you know, and that's something that I cannot say about a lot of coaches. A lot of them is just business, but Coach Sean is, he's not just your coach, he's your friend.
Yeah.
You know, so, there was a day, where he had me and some of the other fighters have a hard sparring day. Mm-hmm. And man, dude, it was so tense. I remember this, like you could walk into the gym and you could cut the tension with a knife. And I was super worried. I was like, dude, I've never even fought before. All these guys have competed and I haven't. And I want to say I was the second person to go in there. Just cause I was like, I'm not going to be the first. If someone's going to get dropped in this, I don't want to be the first one to start that off. So, you know, I went in there, and we cycled out, you know, we fought, all of us had at least maybe like 3 rounds each.
Mm-hmm.
And surprisingly, I did exceptionally well. His opinion, not mine. And then he actually recorded it. And, you know, it's weird. Like, you think that, you know, you do horrible at something and then you kind of see it from a different perspective. You're like, wow, I really wasn't as bad as I thought I was. You know, so he ended up, you know, recording it and I watched it. And I remember, man, it feels like yesterday. He was like, how do you feel about all this? And just watching it, you know, and reflecting on myself, I was like, you know, I have been through so much, you know, at the time it was 3 years. As you know, I've been through so much these past 3 years. And I feel like as far as like all the mental obstacles, I finally overcame it. And I felt like, you know, I was finally ready to do it, you know. And Sean looked at me and he said, you know what, man, like, I think you're ready too. He's like, I've been waiting for this, like, you got it. And just to hear him say those words was like more than enough for me, you know? So yeah. And after that, the rest was history. So,
and we have a couple of other guests here. For those of you who do listen to the show, yes, I have two little Dotsons who normally when I do the show, unless I was doing it with Blake when I was down in Austin, Blake and I would end up recording, you know, in the same place, either his apartment or my apartment. Normally, a lot of them are done over the phone, via Skype, via Facebook Messenger, any of those. But now I have these two little Dotsons that decide that they need to be involved in everything. So they're kind of, you know, taking a little bit of attention away from us. But we'll kind of get back to this. So, DeMarcus, you mentioned the weight off your shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not just an idiom. You have literally, since the last time that I've seen you, slimmed down for that because you had to. So you look at this other aspect. Let me back up. The last time that I was here was about a year ago, and you were a little bit. You were heavier than you are.
Oh,
now.
I was definitely heavier.
So, I was going to say about then. Where were you as far as weight was concerned?
Oh man, last time you saw me, I was probably around like 210, mm-hmm. 215, and now. Well, I probably put on some pounds after the fight because I definitely ate my weight.
They all do.
Yeah, so, but yeah, for that fight, I ended up 175. I felt amazing. I was telling Sean, it's like, man, like, I feel like I'm moving so much faster that I can't even, you know, keep up with it by myself. I felt great. I felt great around that.
So you end up going from, you know, a sizable difference.
Oh, yeah.
And you mentioned, obviously, when you lose weight, you gain speed.
Yes.
However, science is going to tell us when you lose mass, mm-hmm. you're losing force.
Mm-hmm.
So as you started to slim down and you started to get faster on your feet and, you know, quicker with your strikes, did you feel like you were losing power behind them?
At first, I did. And I think the reason why is like, I just wasn't used to how it felt, but you know, as you know, practice continued and whatnot, I kind of realized like, you know what, I can kind of use the speed to kind of make up for that in a way, and yeah, I mean, it worked out pretty well. I will say, like in the fight, I was telling Sean, I was like, man, can I drop the guy like three times? You know, I was like, man, is it me or is his chin that tough or am I just not, you know, as strong as I used to be? But you know, but the speed was just so much, it made so much of a difference that I didn't feel like I was, you know, handicapped or anything like that. So
yeah
it was cool.
Well, and that's good to hear, because you know, again, a lot of times when you're having such a drastic cut, you have to think, and again, we're talking about professionals who do this, when they have a tough weight cut,
yeah,
it shows in the ring.
Oh yeah.
But you know, when we watched your fight, and we'll mention where people can go to look to kind of find that fight here a little later.
Sure.
But when you ended up having that, you didn't seem tired. You didn't seem mentally broken. You know, you definitely went through a full fight camp. You definitely went through a full weight cut.
Oh yeah.
But you know, so the next question is, when you decided that you were going to do the fight and the fight was booked, how far out was the fight from when you booked it?
I think it was about 2 months.
So about 8 weeks.
Yeah, about 8 weeks.
Okay.
Yep.
So from those 8 weeks, you sign it or you verbally agree to it.
Mm-hmm.
Where was the weight then, as opposed to the fact that you fought at 175?
When I started off at that, first when the fight was first even thought of, you know, I was going to be competing. I think I was around like 205.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up dropping 30 pounds for that. I want to say about 30 pounds.
Right.
30 pounds, yeah.
So, but that was still a little bit before the full 2 months that you had when you actually signed.
Yes.
Or you actually agreed to have that fight.
Oh, yeah.
So, let's say you were 205 and you decided you were actually going to end up making that fight.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 months, you know, you finally sign it. You're like, okay, I'm 2 months away. At that point, what, you're probably 190, 195?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
So losing anywhere from about 15 to 20 pounds, roughly?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's not overwhelming. A lot of times we end up seeing those bad weight cuts to people who, you know, try and cut the last 5 pounds, you know, in, you know, the last day.
Yeah.
And that's just miserable, and nobody wins.
And I hear stories like that all the time, and I didn't want to be that guy. As a matter of fact, even starting the whole, you know, weight cut, because I was around 205, like, when it finally got announced that, like, you know, we told the promotion, like, hey, like, I want to fight, and, you know, and Sean's like, okay, they're looking for an opponent. The moment that was confirmed, I was a little upset with myself. I was like, man, I should have actually started this process way before. But what I ended up doing was going completely insane, like, the first 2 weeks. I was, you know, doing cardio and training and eating, like, obviously eating right, hardcore the first 2 weeks. So I kind of, like, the way I kind of thought of it was, okay, I should be here by now, but I'm not, because I kind of waited a little longer than I should have. So let me just kind of burn it all out to kind of get back to where I should be at that time.
Right.
You know, so, yeah.
But when you ended up doing that, and again, you talked about cardio.
Yeah.
There's a different level of cardio that exists between straight up mixed martial arts, because it can go to the ground, it can stand up, it can go to jiu-jitsu,
yes,
all of that. Even still in boxing, you know, you're just throwing hands,
mm-hmm,
but you were doing kickboxing. So it was hands and legs. It was all striking, stand up, no ground.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a difference in how you train cardio wise for that, right? Because normally you think boxers, you think, Rocky just running down the streets of Philadelphia. You,
mm-hmm,
think Floyd Mayweather getting on, you know, a treadmill at 6 a.m. and then, you know, 5 hours later he steps off the treadmill.
Mm-hmm.
Was it similar in the fact that you were just hardcore on treadmill and running outside, or were there different cardio exercises that you did that built up your stamina?
So first of all, I don't even like the treadmill. I'm gonna be,
neither do I.
I hate that thing. It was created by Satan, so I don't support it. But I use the bike a, mm-hmm, lot. Where our gym is, because we're in a facility, next door, they have like this kind of like a private fitness kind of area. And there's a guy over there named Harvey. Great guy. Shout out to him. Him and another, actually a retired kickboxer, is a personal trainer over there too. His name is Chaz. So shout out to him as well. I had talked to them. I said, hey guys, like, you know, I need to get my cardio up. Do you mind if I use the bike? And one of my other teammates, Monica, awesome teammate, she was telling me about Tabata, which is pretty much like HIIT, but like for,
okay,
cardio. So I did like a lot of that. Like our practice were roughly, it was around like an hour, sometimes went over. So after that practice, or even before it sometimes, I would do between 20 to 40 minutes of Tabata, be like completely drained. And then I'd go over to practice and, you know, take care of that business. So, and if we weren't doing that, and because like you said, you know, it's all striking, I would do burnout drills. Lots of burnout drills with throwing, you know, like a gazillion, you know, lead or rear roundhouses, and, you know, or like 20 million punches. Because I needed to make sure that even if I'm tired, I can still throw.
Right.
Know? So that was my main concern, because I always heard this little rumor from other fighters, which I guess is not a rumor. When you have your fight, your cardio usually goes out the window. Just from like nerves, you know, and just burning yourself out because you just want to hurry up and get it over with, you know, so fast. So I was like, okay, if that doesn't happen, I need to make sure I can still throw down. So,
right.
Yeah.
And we've seen this, and you know, thanks to modern statistics, when we watch boxing, when, mm-hmm, we watch MMA, we see total strikes, right? We see thrown versus landed. That's,
yes,
a big one in boxing. And we sit there and we look and we're like, We watch these fighters, and everybody wants to be the armchair quarterback and say, oh, yeah, well, you know, they're not throwing with any real power behind it. They're trying to point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that can't really be draining much. Go in front of a heavy bag and literally just casually throw,
yeah,
100 strikes in 3 minutes.
Well,
and tell me
it.
How you feel.
You're going to feel it.
You know, and you don't have to. And again, just throw them just so that it lands on the bag, not with any power whatsoever. That was one of the biggest humbling things for me in the training that I've done was, yeah, you know, you learn all these kicks, you learn all these movements, you know the right ways to end up fighting somebody, but if you haven't ever fought, you're going to go in here and say, oh, I can do this, and then, like you said, stamina goes out the window because you're not training to be like, hey, I don't care what else you do, the next 3 rounds, you don't get to stop until you've thrown 100 strikes.
Yeah, yeah. And thank God, you know, Coach Sean and, you know, and all my teammates over at Team One, like, really pushed me with the whole cardio thing, because honestly, like, I feel like that amount of, like, you know, cardio training kind of, like, it saved my butt in that fight, that's for sure. Especially because I kind of made some mistakes prior to the fight. So I feel like if it wasn't for all of that, I wouldn't have been able to go all three rounds.
Right.
So, yeah.
Now, as far as the sparring and the training outside of the cardio leading up to this fight, obviously Team One has a lot of fighters mm-hmm. who are both amateur and are on the echelon, if not already, going towards that pro fighting. And so they have that experience that you didn't have walking into this fight. Was there any razzing from your teammates about this? Did they kind of maybe fill your head with something or try and joke around with you about what to expect when it really wasn't the case?
Yes and no. They didn't say too much. The main thing, you know, they were making jokes, you know, about, like, you know, you want to make sure your gas tank is where it needs to be or else, you know, this is going to happen. And, you know, and just make sure you keep your cool because, you know, especially my teammate Sam, he was saying, you know, that's the biggest thing is make sure your mentality is in check. They didn't give me too much crap about it. Well, my teammate Alex did, but that's what I tell a lot of my friends is if you ever seen American Pie,
yeah,
he's our Stifler. So yeah, he had his fair share of jokes. Nothing I can't remember because he jokes that much, but. No, for the most part, you know, they gave me a lot of knowledge. They didn't want to, you know, psych me out or anything like that. Man, they're really, really knowledgeable guys. I don't think that people understand how much really goes into all of this. You know, like I was saying earlier, like, you know, you got your mental state, you got your physical state, and there's, like, even, like, you know, like, certain routines and rituals that you do prior can affect that, you know, and they kind of, like, schooled me on all of that. So I was very, very well prepared. I mean, I was even freaking out about, you know, as far as, like, my diet and stuff goes, and Sam and Tyler Veal, you know, they were all telling me, like, no, like, this is okay, like, this is what needs to happen, and you're doing it fine. So, yeah, they got me a little.
There you go. Well, I was going to say, if you're looking at the weight, you know, 8 weeks out, you're weighing, you know, maybe 20 pounds over, you're losing 2 to 3 pounds a week.
Mm-hmm.
That's right on target.
Yeah.
So there was nothing crazy that you had to worry about. But the other thing that I was kind of questioning was, you watch a lot of these kickboxing, Glory Kickboxing, all of these other Muay Thai exhibits that you see, and you start to wonder, because we have your European style and then you have your more Thai style. Mm-hmm. When you're fighting, are you thinking to yourself, there's a certain ratio of punches to kicks that I should be throwing, or if there's a certain way that I should be doing this?
You know, before the fight, definitely, because, you know, obviously they're scored a certain way. And the first thing I told myself was, like, okay, you know, kicks get this amount of points, you know, sweeps get this amount of points, yada, yada, yada. And I was like, okay, I got to remember this, you know, for when I get in there. And I thought I had, you know, a game plan centered around that. But man, the moment, you know, that bell rang, that all went out the window. And I was like, you know what? I forgot what I was going to do. I'm just going to fight the way DeMarcus fights. And it just happened to work out. And that's one thing that Sean always preaches too. You know, you don't want to go in there and, you know, and try, you know, to alter things right then and there. Like, if you have a game plan and it's a good game plan, like, stick to your roots, man. Stick to what you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So yeah, the points kind of went out the window at that point. I was like, let me just hit this guy, not get hit, and come out with the W. So
when you're in the ring and you're actually fighting somebody, obviously you have your corner men.
Right.
And we can hear them when we watch these fights.
Right.
We can hear the corner men saying what they want to say to their fighters.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the wherewithal to hear what Sean's saying to you while you're fighting? Or are you so focused that some of it kind of gets lost in translation?
For me personally, I actually had no issue with that. I think the only reason, like, because he threw out some combos for me that I don't think I heard right away. But the only reason why I didn't hear it was because, I don't know if you watch, like, you know, Thai fights, but they play that music while the fight's going on. And it was so loud that, like, sometimes, like, I just couldn't hear it because the music was, like, so, you know, it was overpowering. But for the most part, no, I, took everything he said really well. Honestly, I wasn't even really under like a whole lot of pressure. I felt pretty comfortable the entire time being in there, surprisingly. So, yeah, no, that wasn't an issue. It wasn't really an issue.
So the other part, again, before the actual fight itself, the walkout.
Yes.
You're in the locker room. You're already starting to get a little nervous. You know, we all hear that. You get nervous. But then you know, like, this is set in stone. Like, next to coming up, DeMarcus Good coming out to the ring, you're making that walk.
Mm-hmm.
Are you trembling? Are you nervous? Are you calm? What's going on?
If anything, I was too hyped. You know, obviously, there's the fear of the unknown in these type of situations. We all think that we're going to come out the victor, but, you know, you just never know. Like, that's the awesome part about fighting is, you know, someone could be getting dominated, but that one shot just makes a difference. So that, I started thinking about that for maybe, like, a split second. But then at the same time, like, I kind of reminded myself, and this is what one thing that kind of got me through, honestly, all of this is, like I told you earlier, you know, I kind of had low self-esteem. So I thought to myself, there is nothing that can be said to me from the crowd, from, you know, whoever. There's nothing that can be said. There's nothing that can be done to me that I haven't already done to myself. And as far as, you know, the fear of, like, man, this guy might knock me out or put a real hurting on me. Like, I got some tough teammates, man. So it's like, whatever this guy's going to hit me with, I guarantee you my teammates probably already hit me with it, or they probably hit me with it twice as hard. So that, as far as like the confidence goes, like, you know, I had no fear. And any time, like, you know, that fear did try to surface, I kind of have this mantra, you know, courage isn't the absence of fear, it's the mastery of it. So I channeled that courage inside, you know, and then when they called my name and the Lupe Fiasco song, I walked out to Show Goes On. When that hit, man, like, different person. I feel like a superhero at that point.
Well, you mentioned superheroes. We see your pose, Mr. Wakanda, Black Panther there, always striking that damn pose.
Always, always.
But no, and again, it is a team sport because you don't get there without your coach. You don't get there without your sparring partners, without your training partners. But again, you know, you don't want to forget them when you're in the ring, but you kind of need to, right? Because you sit here and think, hey, these are my teammates. Yeah, they're going to throw at me, and they're going to make sure that they make it count.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, they're not throwing it at me because they're trying to knock me out to win a fight, which my opponent is most certainly trying to do.
Yes.
So when you know that, and then you said that you get hit with that strike, and you realize, wait a minute, I've already been hit by this. And I didn't get knocked out there, so now I'm not going to get knocked out here.
Mm-hmm.
Did your confidence grow throughout the fight, or did you start to get nervous because the fight was going the distance? And we all know that as the fight goes the distance, your gas tank runs out.
Oh, yeah.
You never know how the judges are really going to score it. As the fight progressed, were you at more ease, or were you getting a little bit more nervous?
I was definitely more at ease. I think, like, the few times, like, he did make contact, and I'm not calling this man weak in any, you know, shape or form, but, like, when he hit me, I was like, wow, I've actually felt this before. This is nothing new. Okay, we can do this. If anything, the only thing that kind of worried me was my own gas tank. Like I said, like, because when I walked out, I was extremely hyper, and I didn't realize, like, all this jumping around and screaming and stuff. Like, I'm burning gas right now, you know, and I came out really aggressive the first round, so... As the rounds continue, like, that was one thing in the back of my head, like, okay, getting kind of tired, this is not really good, I don't think he's going to knock me out, but if he keeps with the pressure, it's going to look like I'm being dominated. But that's really as far as that went.
Right. So the fight ends, big weight off your shoulder, you go the distance, scorecard comes out, you're victorious, then what? A flood of emotions or confidence just at its all-time peak? What's going through your mind?
So, not to sound arrogant, but I kind of felt like I was going to end up winning it. I just felt like, you know, my pressure was there. I was landing more shots. What threw me off was I actually ended up knocking him out in the third round. So, like, when I dropped him for the last time, and once again, like I said, like, Dakota... the guy I fought. Tough guy, man. The guy's got a crazy chin, and I just feel like his heart, man, he has a strong, tough heart, because every time I dropped him, he'd get back up. So the third time I dropped him, I started walking over to the corner, because I was like, he's going to get back up. He's probably going to get back up. And then I turn around, and I see the ref, you know, waving his arms, and I'm like, wait a minute, is he? Oh my God, he's knocked out. And yeah, dude, surge of emotion, jumped on the ropes, did the Wakanda forever salute to, you know, the crowd. Then I took a page out of Creed's book. I don't know if you've seen Creed 2 when he's like hitting the ground. Mm. I get on the ground and start like punching at the ground. I don't know why I did that. it was just such a surge. You know, what was going through my head, more so going through my heart, you know, it's been 4 years of hell. It's been 4 years of me battling my own insecurities. It's been 4 years of just being told no by so many people. And after all of that, you know, here I am, you know, the Mr. Underdog, the, you know, the nerd, you know, and I just did this. Mm-hmm. I just won. It was, man, there's no feeling like it. There's no feeling like it.
So you get hyped about that. And again, you were 1-0, and you've been doing this for 4 years. So is there a hunger now that's like, oh my God, I need to get back in the ring immediately? Or is it one of those things where it's like, okay, I've done this. I know I can do it again. I know I'm going to do it again, but there's no rush for me to get back into the ring.
You know, had you asked me that question a couple weeks ago, I would have told you there's no rush. But now that, let's just call it the hype of me winning that fight, has kind of settled down. I'm definitely missing that feeling. I miss the adrenaline of being in the ring. So I definitely want to jump back in there. There's things I want to work on first, obviously. I think the biggest thing for me is, like I was telling my girlfriend, I really, really want to prove that I'm not a one-fight wonder now. Because the performance I ended up putting on was that much exciting. There was even pro kickboxers there. Like they were walking up to me like, dude, I can't believe you did that. Like, I've never seen that happen at an event like this, you know? So I definitely want to prove that I can do it again and again and again and again. So.
And again, you've been training for 4 years. You've also been helping work with kids at Team One MMA. Mm-hmm. But in the midst of all of this, you know, you do this. People say, I think the running thing is if you have 5 or 6 wins under your belt as an amateur, mm-hmm. you could go pro. Mm-hmm. Is that a thought through your mind right now? Or you're like, let's take one fight at a time.
Yeah, for me, it's, you know, let's take one fight at a time, because you can go pro, you know, after 5 or 6. And I've seen people do it. And personally, I think it's too soon. Mm-hmm. First off, you know, huge respect to all the pro fighters out there, because that is just a different tier. And I don't think that people really understand that. Even like I've seen like some of the greatest, like, you know, amateur fighters, they're ending with these awesome records, you know, 6-0, 8-2 or whatever. And then they go into that pro fight where even the worst guy is a good fighter, you know, and then they end up getting starched and they're not prepared for it. So I want to make sure, because I want to have a successful fight career. Me personally, like, I would like to do this for the rest of my life. And if I'm going to do this for the rest of my life, I need to make sure that I'm equipped for the long run, because it's going to be a bumpy ride, you know. So no, I have no desire to get there as soon as possible. I want, you know, they say that your amateur run is kind of like a practice for your pros. Well, you know, I'm a very steady practicer, practitioner. Sorry, a little nervous. If you even if you watch me practice, you know, I break things down to like the very, very core of like the movement. It can be something as simple as a jab, and I'm dissecting it down to how my hips should turn, how my shoulders, you know, should turn. I want to make sure I got that all like, the, you know, engraved in my brain before I get in there. If that takes, you know, 8 fights to do it, so be it. If it takes 12 fights to do it, so be it. You know, because when it's all said and done, and when I actually do go pro, I don't have to worry about my own ability. I can honestly say, like, I am confident in what I can do, and these other pros, like, they don't scare me. because I know I'm capable of doing what they can do too.
Absolutely. Well, it sounds like everything has worked out so far for you, DeMarcus, as far, and again, one fight in, so we're not putting the cart before the horse, but you know, you had a great debut, amateur debut fighting. We know that the fight is back there with you. You're ready to get back at it. And of course, you know, you're with Sean and you're in a place that is not hurting for promotions that can get you more fights. So that, of course, is great news. But again, I'm kind of switch gears here because, like you said, you've been doing this for 4 years. But because you've been doing it for 4 years, you've also started at Team One MMA training the kids and working with them. And that's a whole different level. And we see that from a lot of fighters, you know, where almost their favorite part of their job is being able to work with the kids.
Indeed. Indeed.
So when you go through that, I mean, obviously, you know, like you're throwing these kicks and they're landing with so much force. So you have to kind of shift your mentality to work with kids to make it A, informative, but B, they want to be entertained, right? They want to make sure that they're having fun. So how do you kind of switch gears from this fight mentality, training mentality, I'm in my own head, to now it's like, hey, I got kids that I get to, you know, make sure that they're having fun while they're with me in class.
Yeah. It's really not that hard. I'm kind of, like I said, I'm a complete nerd at all times. My girlfriend, Dina, God bless her soul, she has to put up with my goofy self all the time. We just moved in together, so unfortunately she has to deal with it all the time now.
Oh, man. How new is the move-in?
We moved in July.
Oh, my.
Yeah, yeah. And it's been an adventure ever since that first move-in day. So
you're like 6 weeks into this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So certain things that I can tell you to definitely do and certain things I can tell you to definitely avoid. I'm here to tell you, I've seen the good, the bad, and the absolute downright ugly when it comes to that. But that's a separate conversation for a separate show at a separate time.
right on.
So you've been at Team One and you've been working with Sean and you've been working with the kids and you know, you get all these different personalities, like you said, you're self-proclaimed a nerd, and then you end up having the Tyler Veals who are just these super athletic, hardcore when it comes to fighting. You have Sean who's the coach of all of it, who goes back and forth between, you know, being that serious coach, but he's also a little bit of a goofball also. You know, and you see from Team One's Facebook page, you know, some of the things that he'll post.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a lot of times he's posting, you know, news of UFC, you know, fighter A fighting fighter B. It was just booked or whatever. But then you have times it's like, oh, here's your cuteness picture of the day. I'm like, what am I looking at right now?
Yeah.
So when you put all of these quote unquote adults together and they're training now kids, how do you kind of break that down as far as responsibilities are concerned? Who's doing what with the training?
So Sean typically handles the little ones, you know, between like, I want to say like 6, 7, 8, those type of, those little guys. And he's phenomenal with them, man. Like he's, like sometimes like if I got free time or I'll get there earlier, I'll just kind of watch, you know, how well he works with the kids. They seriously love him. He, I believe, is a now vital part of their lives, and he keeps them on the right track. And I just kind of, I try to model that because I work with teenagers, and you know, and the thing about, you know, with teenagers is, you know, they're it's when the attitude and, you know, and lack of discipline kind of come into play. But the cool thing is, because Sean is just so respected, not only as a coach, but you know, just as a man in general, the kids will come in and it's, if Sean says jump, it's how high, you know, with them. And if they ever kind of, you know, get besides themselves, like, he knows how to, you know, handle that properly. Like, and that rarely even ever happens. And yeah, you know, he's teaching me everything that he knows. And, you know, I've been coaching now with the kids for, I want to say about a year or two. And even still, like, just when I think, like, okay, I've mastered this job, you know, and every now and then, you know, you'll get that student where they kind of have your number. You know, and I'm like, okay, I don't know, this is not going to work out with this guy or whoever it is. And Sean comes in, and just watching him, like, that man's so universal. Like, he is so universal. There is not, in my opinion, there's not a kid that he cannot work with. He's mastered his craft.
Oh, wow. So,
yeah.
And again, this is coming from somebody who did fight a long time ago.
Yes.
And now he's gone completely over to training. Mm-hmm. But you also kind of have to wonder, has that fight bug hit him? With as many times as he's cornered fighters, mm-hmm. you almost have to wonder, you know, he might be getting that bug coming back here shortly, but then we haven't seen him in there, so maybe he's just kind of gotten away from that completely, and there's all the respect in the world to that, and certainly nothing wrong with it at all.
Yeah.
But then again, you see the jiu-jitsu classes mm-hmm. that are done, and he'll jump in there, and there are so many people there. With you doing kickboxing, have you done any extensive training with any groundwork that they may offer, or is it just kind of, look, this isn't going to be my sport? There's no way that I'm going to change that. So no, I'm not going to get into it.
You know, when I first started at Team One, I did both. I did striking and grappling. And, you know, respect to all the grapplers out there, but I just wasn't feeling it. I feel like my heart wasn't in it. I did enjoy it, but I just feel like I wasn't as passionate about it as they were, as opposed to striking. So now I'm only doing striking. Every blue moon, I'll jump in there and maybe roll with a couple of people. But once that's done, you will not see me on the ground for like another like year and a half. Eventually, you know, when I become more successful as a kickboxer, maybe I'll dib and dab in more grappling. I notice that a lot of kickboxers, as time progresses, they kind of go over to the MMA side,
right,
and they start messing around with, you know, grappling. As of right now, you know, I'm not feeling that, but you never know what the future holds. So, yeah, we'll see.
Absolutely.
We'll see.
Well, of course, and we know that Team One has been good there, and I dabbled in training over there. It was just going back and forth between here and Texas and then getting situated back in here. I definitely feel the bug of having to go and strike sometime in the very near future. It's just making sure that I'm settled in here completely before I do it, because I'm definitely feeling it in my body.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny. I would literally be walking around work and my hip would start to seize on me.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's like, are you okay? Or like, oh, you're wearing the wrong shoes, or oh, you're not stretching. I'm like, no, I'm not throwing kicks. And they don't get it. It's like, yeah. I used to throw those little check kicks or those little sweep kicks.
Yeah.
And my hip would engage. And now it's like my body's like, wait, so we're not going to throw these? So I don't need it to be as, you know, elastic mm-hmm. as it is?
Right.
Okay, fine. And it would hurt. I'm not kidding. It would start to hurt me. I'm sitting here trying to walk and I'm limping. And everyone's like, what did you do? And they think that I just got out of a fight. I'm like, no, it's because I haven't. It's the opposite. But, you know, and again, it's always great to be able to have these, because again, I feel like a lot of times, and I'm probably one of the most guilty of this, we have, you know, Mike Heck, James Lynch, Eric Kowal, Bob Maloney, all of the staff over at MyMMA News, and they're covering regional fights, they're covering amateur fights, they're covering pro fights, they're covering those big UFC Bellator cards. Mike Heck is at Media Day for Bellator right now, as a matter of fact. You know, and he's probably talking to all the fighters that are there. I'd imagine he's talking to Dan Kitchen and Scott Coker. But, you know, it's something that I've always had a struggle being able to get into, because we have the Mike Finches of the world, the Matt LaCoshas,
mm-hmm.
Mike Pendleton, you know, and they seem to have a pretty firm lock on the amateur and the regional scene out here.
Oh, yeah.
But now I'm trying to get back into it, because I think other than you, the other person that I had on, and I'm going to forget her name, so forgive me, but she's one of the belt holders that works with, like, Wrecking Crew MMA or something mm-hmm. like that. Tiny little girl, but again, she's a completely different person when she steps in the ring.
Yeah.
So it's, for you, we obviously watch all of these UFC cards. We watch the main boxing cards when they come up. When you now step in to a regional circuit and you're in this, how has your respect for it changed as opposed to prior to going into this?
You know, it's the journey that I respect the most. You see these guys, you know, on TV, you know, like, you know, the John Joneses and, you know, the Anderson Silvas, you know, all these guys, and you just see, you know, how prestigious they are, you know, in their sport, but you just never really think about, you know, like, where they started. And me personally, I think that, you know, the amateur fighters, I think they deserve, you know, the most support, especially, you know, like that's our end goal. You know, we all want to get there, you know, at some point. We all want to be, you know, that guy on TV that, you know, people are watching at home and they're just like, man, I want to be like that guy. But, you know, like, I just feel like it's always like a, kind of like a chain effect. You know, we watch these guys and, you know, and we think like, man, like that's what I want to be. You know, that's what I want to get to. You know, but then like, you never think like, who was John Jones watching that made him, you know, say that too? And you just respect the grind, man. You just respect the grind. You know, for them being motivated and literally, you know, busting their asses to make it there. And even, you know, with my fight, after it all happened, you know, and someone walked up to me and they were like, man, dude, I can't wait for you to get to the pros. And, you know, I'm sitting there thinking like, dude, I just had my first fight. You're already talking about that. I don't think it's time for that just yet. And immediately, you know, when he said that, I just thought about the next, you know, I can't find the correct word.
Next group of people. That next level.
Yeah, the
next levels, generation.
The next generation, you know, and all the levels that you have to get through, you know, to make it to the top. So I've always respected the pros. You know, they're so, you know, clean cut, you know, with how they do things. That's another thing that I end up appreciating a lot too, because when I'm sparring, when I'm, you know, hitting pads or whatever, I feel like I feel super clean. And then I got in there and I don't think I was like super duper sloppy, but I did notice like, man, I'm not as crisp as I am in practice. So, you know, to watch these guys and they make it look so easy. You know, they make it look flawless. But once again, like they started from amateur and they built themselves up to the point where they can do that effortlessly. How could you not respect them? You know, even the fighters that aren't as liked as, you know, from, you know, by the crowd, like you gotta respect them. So, anyway, hats off to them, dude. Like, once again, it's a bumpy ride. And for those who managed to tough it out all the way, I think, you know, take Misha Tate. Didn't she, I'm pretty sure it was her. Didn't she like sleep in her car for a bit while she was?
I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure most of them did.
Yeah. Or even Connor. I mean, we're not going to talk about what's going on with him now, but you know, like, I mean, the man was on welfare and enslaved, you know, because amateurs don't make anything.
No, they don't.
You might be lucky enough, you know, to get money from your ticket sales, but even still, like, that's only maybe like a couple hundred at the most, you know, and for them to tough it out, you know, they you have to work a normal person job, you know, and still live your daily life and still manage to find time to still pursue this dream. And it's taxing on your body. And after you're done practicing, you have to go back to your life, go back to work, you know, and keep doing that until you get, you know, to that elite status. Those people that have made it happen, like, dude, if I could, I got to clap for them. I got to clap for him on that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you've gotten the first one under your belt. We've talked about how you're ready to get back in. You know, you right now know the scene better than I do because I've been away from it for a minute. Do you have a target event that you want to be at next?
I'm loving Prime Muay Thai. They treated me very, very well in that whole process. I also would not mind fighting for a Total Fight Challenge. Joe Goitia, I love what he does. I love how he runs things. Just overall great guy. You know, I want to be the guy that fights for honest people.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
HFC. If they have a kickboxing level. Oh man,
yeah. If they ever did, I would totally be down for it. Mm-hmm. You know,
maybe even XFO if they have that.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind. You know, I feel like I can't be too picky because I'm only one fight in. Mm-hmm. So I'm down for anything, but I'm open. I'm open.
There you go. Well, DeMarcus, we had a good conversation. Like I said, it's nice to get that really the greenest of an amateur fighter talking about this and getting that mentality, because nobody's really going to go on, and especially as they get more in depth in their fighting record, no one's going to go in and give anything away to where maybe it can be used against them, you know? So when you say, oh yeah, I was nervous. It was my first fight. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did feel sloppy. That's about as honest as you can get. So I want to thank you for that. And again, we've talked them up until they're blue in the face, but I'm never going to have a problem doing it again. I do know that when I end up getting myself situated back in here, I think I know who I'm going to have to spar with and kind of get my training back. So especially since now your hits, like if I take one from you, it's still going to hurt like shit. But it's not going to be coming from somebody who's 205. So I feel like maybe I can handle it a little better. But before we let you go, obviously you're at Team 1 MMA, but you know, a shout out to all of your coaches, training staff, people who kind of helped you along the way, you know, take the platform and let everybody know, you know, where they can find you, where they can find the fight if they're trying to find it online. Go ahead and let everybody know.
Yeah, for sure. First of all, shout out to my girlfriend, Dina Edgelon. She has been my biggest supporter, my best friend through all of this. There were times where, you know, old habits started to resurface as far as like my thinking patterns, and you know, she got me back on track. She's a real trooper, and honestly, like when I won that fight, it wasn't just my victory, it was hers as well. You know, shout out to my teammates, you know, Michael Myers, Alex Rivera, all those guys, man. Sorry if I didn't name any of you all. They've been phenomenal teammates. And I honestly feel like I wouldn't be able to accomplish what I've accomplished without their support. For those who would like to follow me, I have an Instagram. You can follow me at The Mighty Kid Charisma. If you wish to look at the fight, just type in Prime Muay Thai. You will see DeMarcus Good versus Dakota Chartier. Shout out to Dakota for fighting me. He's a warrior. I do hope to see him again in the future. Yeah, man, thanks for having me on here. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
Oh, I love it. Like I said, I feel like I have done a disservice by not being able to cover the regional scene as much as I have. And, you know, it's something that Eric and I will kind of joke back and forth with a little bit, but there's not really much joking because he's the damn editor. So when he wants regional coverage, I need to be able to provide it a little bit better. So, Eric, I've got you, and we're starting here. So, but that's really going to do it here for the SFLC podcast. DeMarcus Good, pleasure having you on. Look forward to having you on again. Maybe like when we start breaking down some more fight cards, bringing you on. I've always wanted to have Sean on. He's always found a way to skip on me, so I feel like now that you've been on, you can kind of talk some shit to him and razz him a little bit.
I definitely will. Hope he doesn't punish me in practice for it.
Oh, no, it'll be great. It'll be outstanding. So, but on behalf of DeMarcus Good for the SFLC podcast, I'm Ryan Sprague. Enjoy Bellator 225 this weekend, everybody. We'll be back next weekend, or next week, breaking down UFC in China. But enjoy the weekend and have fun, everybody. Peace.